Since our last one, we'll call a U.S.-funded mercenary force based in Florida invaded Venezuela and a promising drug therapy for coronavirus out of Cuba is being purposely ignored by the U.S. government. Cindy Domingo, co-chair of the Cuba and Bolivarian Alliance Committee, is with us to explain what's happening and what we can do about it. Be sure you jot down your questions to ask. Cindy, please give us some insight behind the headlines. Your mic is open.
Thank you, Mary Beth, and thank you for the organizers of the One Wealth Call in inviting myself and Lenny Reeves, who's my co-chair, who's the co-chair of the committee, to present. You know, I believe that at no other time has the intersectionality of all of our issues been so stark. When we look at the issues of climate crisis, healthcare, and then our drive to war and the use of sanctions, all of those issues are important today. And many people are much more aware of what's happening in the world as well as in the United States in terms of the intersection of these issues. The heightened attack against Cuba and Venezuela continue to demand our attention and our immediate action, especially as the Trump administration continues to pursue its policy of regime change, even under this global pandemic. And if you were able to listen to the excellent webinar, which was attended by hundreds of people, that happened on Saturday, May 9th, on about entitled "Sanctions Kill," and Nancy Price has put on the text tab the link. I would really encourage you to listen to that because you can understand so clearly from the representatives of those countries that are under sanctions that were represented on that call, the impact of sanctions. Not only has it increased under this pandemic, increased the suffering, but also death of people that are suffering from the sanctions that the United States has implemented, even against the United Nations laws and international laws.
Obviously, We posted the link to that webinar on the text pad, so if people are interested in hearing it, it's right there under Nancy Price's name.
It was an excellent webinar. So, you know, we have obviously talked about the attacks in Venezuela, are about oil and about regime change, and Cuba, which has been under attack for 60 years as a result of the blockade, which is not only a financial, economic, but also inhibits our ability to build ties and to really understand what's happening in Cuba because we can't even travel there anymore. Lenny is going to, we're going to present today on two issues. One is, as Mary Beth has said, the recent coup and what's happening in Venezuela as a result of and what U.S. foreign policy is towards that. And then also Cuba around a newly launched campaign called the U.S.-Cuba-Canada Collaboration in Fighting COVID-19. So let me introduce Lenny, the co-chair of the committee.
Yeah, hi, I'm Lenny Villagomez-Reeves. And as you said, I'm the co-chair with the Cuba and the Bolivarian Alliance Issue Committee. I just wanted to correct one tiny thing that you said. Actually, we cannot travel legally to Cuba. Since I just got back from Cuba about 6 weeks ago, and since I travel repeatedly to Cuba, I am here to tell you, you can travel to Cuba. We don't always have to do what the U.S. government tells us to do. Okay, now let's talk about Venezuela. As you probably all know, on May 3rd and May 4th, there was an invasion launched from the shores of Colombia, sponsored by the U.S., and the goal was to kidnap or kill the president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro. The coup operation, which fortunately failed, was organized by a U.S. Army special veteran, a special operations veteran, a Green Beret, who has a signed contract, which somehow they decided to release to the Washington Post with just a little bit redacted. You can look it up. So this is a million-dollar contract, $213 million fee to kidnap Maduro. And that was the plan. They were going to invade from Colombia, land on the shores of Macuto and Chuao, and seize the airport, kidnap Maduro, bring him to the U.S., and install the government of Guaido. This contract is interesting. In addition to the signatory, this Jordan Goodrow character, who is the head of a securities corporation called Silvercore, which just coincidentally has provided security for at least one Trump event. The other signatories on that contract are Sergio Vergara and Juan José Rendón, both of which, until after the failure of this attack, were high officials in Guaido's pretend government. Neither of them is currently based in Venezuela. Vergara is in Colombia, and Juan José Rendón is in Miami, where he's been honored by the U.S. Congress. He had a flag raised in his honor. Can we go back a little? Let's point out the fact that almost exactly 1 year ago, on April 30th of 2019, there was another attempted military coup sponsored by the U.S., openly directed by U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton, who was trying to promote uprisings in Venezuela. So apparently we were going to do a coup attempt a year here. The other actions, which have been far more successful, if you define success as causing, you know, suffering and distress and, you know, making the Venezuelan people miserable because the economy is in trouble. These things have actually worked out better. And this started in 2014, in December of 2014, when Obama first imposed sanctions on Venezuela, has continued unrelenting ever since. Another thing that happened a year ago, besides the fact that the U.S. sponsored an attempted coup in Venezuela, is that the U.S. seized all Venezuela's assets that they could get their hands on and turned them over to the supposed Guaido government. The millions of dollars you see in this contract for killing or capturing Maduro are small change compared with the seizure of $342 million of Venezuelan assets that were in an account at Citibank, which were taken by the U.S. The Venezuelan oil company Citgo, everything that was in the U.S. was seized. Any assets of anyone in the government that the U.S. could get their hands on were seized. And so, you know, it's not subtle. And you will see references in the media, and a lot of people don't go beyond this, to the fact that Venezuela's economy is in terrible shape. Oh, the economy is in terrible shape. People are suffering. It must be a really bad government. There have been U.S. sanctions in place since December of 2014, trying to make absolutely sure that the Venezuelan economy is in terrible shape. So whose fault is it, the Venezuelan government or the U.S. government? So anyway, yeah, you can go to the Washington Post. You can read the 47 pages of this contract, except for the one page that's redacted. You can go online and hear the audio signing that not only includes Guaido's high officials, but includes him on the audio. And you can look at the statement by Pompeo, who said, you know, with this charmingly, candid face, There was no U.S. government direct involvement in this operation. We're not prepared to share any more information about what we know took place. And then, of course, you know, Trump said, if we had done it, it would have been huge. I'm actually paraphrasing that. I quoted Pompeo. As you pointed out, Venezuela has the world's largest oil reserves. So U.S. politicians who normally can be counted on to take at least semi-sane positions just totally lose their shit, you'll pardon my saying this, when it comes to Venezuela. The lobby that pressures politicians in the U.S. and elsewhere to maintain bizarre positions on Venezuela is the oil lobby. This is about money. It's not just some irrational, they have a socialist government kind of thing. We're trying to get our hands on their oil. They have a socialist government which will not allow the Venezuelan oil reserves to be taken by multinational companies and not used for the benefit of the Venezuelan people. I don't know if I've used up all my time or not, and I'd really welcome questions. We could talk about Venezuela all day and not cover everything.
We're going to have questions at the end, Lenny.
Thanks, Lenny. Before we open this up to Q&A for both Cindy and Lenny, Cindy has some more information about the U.S. efforts to squelch a potentially important treatment for COVID-19 just because it comes from Cuba. Cindy, your mic is open.
Thank you. So I want to talk about what I referred to earlier on, which is a campaign called U.S.-Cuba-Canada Collaboration in Fighting COVID-19. And I hope we posted the website up on the text pad, and I hope you'll go to the website to find out more information. This campaign was an outgrowth of an effort by over 70 organizations from the United States and Canada who were organizing a national conference on Cuba for last March, and Wolf, U.S. was part of that effort and continues to be part of this campaign. This is probably the broadest effort ever to come together to organize in support of Cuba and to lift the blockade. And while the conference in November was postponed because of the pandemic, we knew that our work was just beginning because of the pandemic. The pandemic, by definition, is global, and what became so clear to us is that Cuba has always had a global perspective when it came to healthcare. And because the pandemic was global, it was necessary, we called, to put aside our political differences, to call on all medical, scientific expertise, and to call for international cooperation in this fight against COVID-19. So this campaign concretely is calling for three things. One, to allow U.S., Cuba, Canada, medical, clinical, and scientific collaboration, including inviting Cuban medical brigades to provide direct medical assistance and or to provide advice and guidance in treating COVID-19. We focus on these three countries because Cuba can aid us, and the United States has had a 60-year-old blockade, which has historically stopped that type of collaboration, except for a couple of instances. And Canada has joined us in this call as well. In court, our second call is incorporating Cuba's interferon alpha-2b recombinant in clinical trials in the United States, Canada, and by the World Health Organization, and the granting by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approvals for that type of testing. And then lastly, in order for those two things to take place, we have to end U.S. economic and travel sanctions against Cuba, including its extraterritorial nature and the attempts to stop other countries from accepting Cuban medical brigades and assistance, and all ongoing measures that prevent Cuba from accessing and importing medical equipment and medicines to confront COVID-19. And this is important because recently a shipment of personal protection equipment was stopped that was coming from China because the United States said it violated the blockade, which it does not violate, but it was stopped anyway. So I just want to make a comment about Cuba's history in the world regarding the internationalist perspective and practice in healthcare to the peoples of the world. And I hope you'll read my latest article that was in the April e-newsletter, which went in more detail about that history. But Cuba has been on the front lines of ensuring the world's people, especially in the global south, ensuring that they had access to healthcare. And so since 1963, they have been sending healthcare delegations to work in various countries. And since that launching, there's been a total of 450,000 healthcare workers to 160 countries, resulting in 1.6 billion people served with healthcare without any charge to the patient. And most significant, with Cuban healthcare teams were the first to volunteer and were decisive in the fight against Ebola in Africa. And Cuba even offered to send a healthcare team to New Orleans after Katrina hit, but the United States wouldn't allow it. And then more recently, the healthcare teams from Cuba went to China to collaborate, as well as they were requested to go to Italy to serve in the hardest hit areas of Italy, but as well to bring the antiviral called interferon alpha 2b recombinant to assist in the fight. And while this is not a vaccine, and I'd like to note that that Cuba also has an arsenal of about 15 or more other medications that they have utilized in the various treatments of dengue fever, HIV/AIDS, Ebola, hepatitis B and C, shingles, and now COVID-19. But it's really this interferon alpha 2b recombinant that we think can that has been used to build the immune system and has been used in the most severe cases of the viruses. Currently, Cuba's medical brigades are now collaborating in 22 countries, I think, now. And there's a great map of where they're serving on the website. This campaign, which is going by the campaign name Saving Lives, and these medical brigades are helping to save lives. And the most recent brigade went to South Africa, made up of over 200 people. And there are two brigades. There's a particular contribution that women in Cuba have made because there are two brigades that are entirely made of women, and women make up over 50 or 60% of the healthcare professionals in Cuba, and so they make up large numbers of the healthcare delegations. I just want to say that as we open up our country to get back to the so-called normalization of our country, we see that the escalating numbers of people being confirmed cases as well as deaths in the country, and it will only continue to escalate because our leadership has failed to do the massive testing needed and the protection that workers need in order to go back. We know that our president has said he wants to get the economy going. Some people will be impacted, and some people will be impacted very badly, and that means they're going to die. And we know that people of color, there are a number of articles now that have uncovered that people of color, especially African Americans, Latinos, and the indigenous people of the United States are negatively impacted disproportionately. Black Americans are 3.6 times more likely to die from COVID than white people. And it's because of the legacy of racism and the higher rates of diabetes, high blood pressure, etc. I don't know if people have heard in Washington State, Eastern Washington, there are now 12 meatpacking and fruit warehouses in Washington State where predominantly Latino workers are on strike, wildcat strikes, unheard of in this country. And they're striking because they don't have the safe distancing, they don't have the personal protection equipment, and they refuse to go back into work. And lastly, I want to say that, we need to end the blockade. And our movement has been working to end the 60-year-old blockade. And under this administration, the blockade has only been harshened, and especially even under this pandemic. And the blocking of the humanitarian aid needed to fight COVID-19 is only one act that the U.S. has implemented in recent months. The Trump administration has pressured countries not to accept Cuba's offers of the medical health care teams and their medicines, and has spread fake news that the medical personnel sent to countries around the world are a form of human trafficking by Cuba. And the United States has also had a program to try to actively recruit Cuban healthcare workers, especially the doctors, to leave the countries in which they have volunteered to go and to come to the United States. So even more so, as we say, and we need to end the blockade. We need to call for international cooperation, especially with Cuba. They have antivirals and medications that can help us, and it's about saving lives. And we, in the face of this pandemic, need to figure out how to save lives, and therefore calling for international cooperation. So that's the end of my presentation. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Cindy, for that very important glimpse into the backstory and into what's going on, which we don't hear about very much in the media at all. So it's very helpful to get that information from you. So if you have questions for Cindy about the drug treatment from Cuba,
I wanted to. I've got to add in terms of action. Right. Oh yeah, action steps. So. We do have an organized, so first of all, if you could go to the website, www.savinglives.us, cubanormalization.org. It's up on there on the text pad. And in our, read the call, and we hope that people will sign on to the call, and if you have other organizations in your areas, to get them to sign on to the call. We have an organizer's packet that is made up of the call. Recently, Senators Leahy and McGovern sent a letter to the Secretary of State Pompeo stating that, the sending of humanitarian aid under sanctions and in Cuba is permitted, and that they should not stop that type of humanitarian aid. And so we are asking people in their local areas to thank McGovern and Leahy for sending that letter, but to get other congressional members to sign on to that letter. So the letter is included in that packet, a sample letter of what you can write to Leahy and McGovern. There's also a resolution that was passed in Richmond, California, that if you feel that you could get passed in your local areas in support of the campaign. And then lastly, some guidelines around working with elected officials from the federal level to local. So we're asking people to sign on to the call, and if possible, to get any kind of publicity in media outlets. And lastly, to lobby your congressional delegation to lift the blockade. And there are a number of bills that are still in Congress, and they are going to be posted on our website, on the Wolf U.S. website, under the Cuba and the Bolivarian Alliance Committee website, which is going to be hopefully done this week. One has to do with lifting the travel blockade, both in the House and the Senate. The other one, lifting the trade embargo, and then the third set of bills in the Senate and the House allowing agricultural export expansion. So those are concrete steps in which you can take
to support the Saving Lives campaign as well as lifting the blockade. Thank you.
Great, yeah. Cindy.
I would also like to add my action items, if
go ahead.
I may. Yeah, and just before I do that, I'd like to add a little onto what Cindy was saying, and in addition to urging you to sign on to the Saving Lives campaign. It's really hard to compare raw numbers between Cuba and the U.S. because Cuba is a small country and the U.S. is a huge country. But if you break it down per million, the U.S. has about 3,700 cases per million people and about 210 deaths per million people due to the SARS-2 coronavirus. Meanwhile, in Cuba, they have about 146 cases per million and about 11 deaths per million people. So if you look at the fact that they have 20 times fewer deaths, that really supports the idea that we might have something to learn from Cuba about handling this epidemic. Now, if we have to, what we have to learn is that you need, a national health system and a national public health system and some sane people in charge. Well, that's another lesson. But it also would be very good to get the pharmaceuticals that Cuba has been working on. That has produced such good results in their country and that have been requested throughout the world, including, as Cindy pointed out, from Italy. This is the very first time that a Cuban medical brigade has been requested to go to a European, quote, first world, unquote, country. And so that's remarkable. So what I wanted to ask you to do with regard to Venezuela is this. I would like to ask you to get in touch not only with your elected representative, but with somebody who wants to be your elected representative. I would like you to get in touch with Biden, by whatever means you can, who said that U.S. sanctions should be maintained with Cuba over its support for the government, the elected government of President Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela. Biden is a Guaido supporter, and what he supports about Guaido are apparently his efforts to restore democracy. Now, how restoration of democracy comes about by sponsoring yearly attempts at military coups and kidnapping and killing of the head of state. I'm not really sure how this fits into democracy, and I think somebody should point out to Biden that doesn't really go well. And we will, you already know how to get in touch with all these people. You're Wilpers. We don't have to tell you this. And what I would like to do at some point is direct you to good Venezuela information, and I bet that's going to be up on the website too, is it, Cindy?
I think so, yeah, it will be.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, get in touch with Biden, ask him what he thinks he's doing, you know, point out that there's no reason to overthrow the government of Venezuela except to try to steal their oil, and that maybe that's a bad idea, that there's no reason to overthrow the government of Cuba except to make sure that this bad example of, how you can actually have a commitment to your people in terms of health and education and their welfare, we can't allow that to happen. Anyway, thank you.
Okay, well, this is just so much great information from both of you. We really appreciate you being on the call today. And so now we're going to open up for questions. And so if you have questions for Cindy about any of what she has talked about, drug treatment or medical assistance or any of the other issues she talked about, or for Lenny about the invasion forces in Venezuela or any other issues, please raise your hand by pressing number 1 on your phone keypad now. Press number 1 to ask a question. Okay, so we have a question from Odile. Odile, you want to ask a question? Your mic is open.
Thank you for an excellent report. What I wonder is, what is it that the Venezuelans need now? Do you know what is the state of starvation in the country, and I heard that Cuba has long line. I have a friend who has friends in Cuba, and he's always on the phone. And he tells me that there is long line for food in Cuba also right now. Do you know about that?
Yes, I do. I am in daily touch with friends in Cuba, thanks to WhatsApp. And there are long lines for food in Cuba, but everybody is eating. Whether that is true, and everybody is getting medical care. Whether that is true in Venezuela, I don't know. I have not ever been to Venezuela, and I don't have friends there. I have friends who have been there, including one Cuban friend who was on mission there for a couple of years in Corazon Adentro, but they don't know exactly what's going on now. The people they're in touch with tell them that the situation with regard to food and, but especially, to medicine, is very critical in Venezuela. And again, this is not this didn't happen by itself. This is the deliberate policy of the U.S. government.
Yes, yes. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Laura Dewey, you have a question?
Not a question. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, it's not a question. I just want to tell you the link to U.S. Saving Lives was wrong. So I found the website and I put the correct link in there.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Okay, Joan Goddard, you have a question? Your mic is on.
Thank you. I just wanted to say thank you so much, Cindy and Lenny. The amount of information is overwhelming and good. And I wondered, the Saving Lives is primarily about the coronavirus situation, I think. And then the U.S. normalization, U.S.-Cuba normalization, for those who don't see it, is probably a more general source of information, US-CubaNormalization.org, and also the Venezuela analysis website that's listed that some people may not be able to see, and that's why I'm saying these things, is Venezuela, and there's only one.
Venezuela Analysis is a news site. It's a pretty decent news site about Venezuela. There are other,
and is it,
we'll get more links up on the website.
Is it just
later.
One? Is it just one A there?
Just one A.
Venezuela announcement, or are there supposed to be two?
No, one A.
One
A. So it runs together. Venezuela Analysis. Venezuelan Analysis. Anyway, so those are good additional sources, because I wrote lots of notes and probably other people did too. But it's hard to get everything, and it's good to have the websites to go to add to our information and to verify what we wrote down as opposed to what you said. Thank you.
Very much.
Thank you. Okay, Ellen is up now. You're. Mic is open, Ellen. Ellen Mass.
I think it's open. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. In looking for congressional initiatives, you mentioned the Pompeo letter from McGovern, and my group, the Latin America group here in Boston, has been looking for the best anti-sanction initiative from Congress. And when I saw the Canada-U.S. Cuba forum the other night, I think, I forgot when exactly it was, just recently, the one with the different representatives from various countries, from the top level, I forgot
right.
what
the kill. Was. Right, the sanctions kill webinar.
Yeah, sanctions kill, of course. So they were very clear that these congressional initiatives are very, very important. But we really haven't found one other than Ilhan Omar that is really something concrete that they can sign on to. We know there have been requests to these letters that are going out, like 11 senators signed the letter to stop the Cuban embargo. But what do we really have? This is what you say you're going to put on your your new website, and it's not up yet. Is that right? Is that my understanding, Lenny, that it's not up yet?
I believe that you're correct. I tried to put something on the bottom of the text pad. I don't know whether it is visible to you. Just below the healthcare not warfare, I've listed the bills that are currently in Congress. Can anybody see that? Do I have to press share or something?
You don't have to add share.
Pardon?
You don't have to add share. I don't see where your bills are, though. Is it on the text pad?
I tried to put them on the text pad just below the healthcare not warfare poster, the Global Days of Action on Military Spending.
Oh, it's all the way at the end. I'm sorry.
At the end, yes. Can you see it? So there are the House bills and the corresponding Senate bills, yes, that are currently in Congress. There they all are, yep.
Do you have any advice on that seems to be moving and has the most sanctioned countries, in other words, not just one or two, and also is the one most promising. So in getting behind it, that it has more potential for more signatures in Congress. Do you have some advice?
Well, the Senate bill, Senate 2303, has 45 co-sponsors, and that's the travel bill. And that has to do with our rights as U.S. citizens to travel wherever we want to. That's a good bill, but I think it's more important even to get behind the bills that end sanctions.
Okay, so you don't have a preference.
I don't know if Nancy is still on the phone call. Maybe she has a sense in terms of Congress if there's anything moving around the sanctions kill work. In terms of lifting all sanctions.
Nancy, are you on the call? Can we get Nancy?
She's on the call.
Can we open her mic?
I mean, the difficulty is that even the Progressive Caucus, which has the most progressive, sometimes the most progressive congressional members, and even AOC does not hold a very good position around Venezuela. And so it's been very difficult to get them to address the sanctions issues just on Venezuela. And even Bernie Sanders.
Yep.
Yes, I know that.
Yeah.
Okay. So Nancy, did you have any comment about this? I think your mic is open. Well, we'll move on then. Lorna Paisley, you had a question?
Nancy, are you muted? Because, like, your mic's live here, so I bet you're muted.
I didn't mute. I didn't mute. Where do I unmute?
No. Nancy, are you muted?
Oh.
Because we had your mic on the moment you started, like, they mentioned your name. Are you muted, Nancy? Because sometimes she's muted, she doesn't realize it.
Hey, apparently Nancy's just not
dropped off. Available right now. So she might come back later and I respond.
Right.
Why don't we move on to other questions? Lorna Paisley from LA, your mic is open.
The other night I was watching the show NCIS Los Angeles on CBS station, and they did an anti-Venezuela issue, and it really bothered me, but I don't, what do you do? I guess you would have to contact CBS or something. I didn't do that, but maybe somebody else would like to. I bet it was one of the more recent episodes. I think I'm a little behind, but I thought that was, you know, negative feedback from a TV show about Venezuela. That's what I wanted to say. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Judy Adams from Menlo Park.
I'm sorry. My question is on where is the list of bills in the text pad? I've gone down below as far as I can go, which is still at detail on the Cuban drug and action steps for Cuba, but I don't see the bills. Then there's the member forum.
Wait, at the bottom, there's an infographic posted. It's about something different entirely, but after that is where the bills are posted.
Okay, I'll look. Are they posted? Will they be posted on wilpus.org?
Yeah, they were. We were hoping they were going to get posted before this call, but we'll ask Gary. Maybe Gary can address that when she comes on the call.
They're way down. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, great. Diane Blaze from Fairfax, Virginia, you have a question?
Yes, I do. Well, just as an aside about bad press for Venezuela, I don't know if any of you saw season 2 of Jack Ryan series, but it was horrible. It was, the whole thing was about Venezuela and the horrible president there and what they did to, you know, anyway, that what the U.S. did and overthrowing them. But what I wanted to say is that Darian had gone to Venezuela as part of the group from the U.S. That visited right before the embassy was taken over, or the embassy group started staying there. But she had just been there, so she would probably can tell us more about whether there's food shortages and or whether there were in Venezuela. And then I was just curious what people thought about what is the percentage of, you know, we hear how horrible it is in Venezuela. How much, and I know that our sanctions affected them, but how much do you think it's, like 25%, I mean, of the problems? I mean, because we just hear how horrible it is. Everybody's leaving. They're going to Colombia, and everything's so bad. I mean, that's what I hear typically.
Ma'am?
And the press,
I think it's about 200% of the problem, because the people I know in Cuba who did missions in Venezuela before the imposition of U.S. sanctions were full of praise for the economy, for the education system. They said every child has a laptop. It's like they have so much more resources than we have here in Cuba. And so I think it was imposition of U.S. sanctions that is the problem. The Venezuelans can work out the rest of their problems for themselves. They do not need our intervention. This, the Monroe Doctrine is not active. It's not valid. And all we have to do is get our foot off their neck.
Okay. That sounds, I've thought that perhaps, but it's good to hear someone say it. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Diane, for the question. Charlotte Dennett from Burlington, you have a question? Your mic.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I'm listening to this fascinating discussion as an author of a book that took my husband and me 18 years to complete, and it was suppressed because it was an expose on Nelson Rockefeller and the Rockefeller involvement in literally setting up their own empire in Latin America. The name of the book is Thy Will Be Done, The Conquest of the Amazon, Nelson Rockefeller and Evangelism in the Age of Oil. And the book was rescued by Open Road Media. We were permitted to put in an update. That was a couple of years ago. It's available as an e-book. And I just want to let you folks know about it, because this book was written for those who need to know. And so we're not making any money for sales of ebooks, I promise you. I just want you to know about this book. It's got 5-star reviews. It's on Amazon. And we predicted everything that's happening. And we were able to predict it because we go to the highest level. I used to talk about climbing to the top of the mountain. That's the Rockefeller Mountain. And when you get to the top, everything makes sense. So I would just ask you guys to check out this book, because it's full of information about how the effort that began in World War II with Nelson Rockefeller, of all people, heading up being the coordinator of inter-American affairs, and how he made alliances with military, intelligence, and local governments to literally control Latin America, and they're still at it. And if you read our update, you'll find out how they're still at it. That's it. Just want to let you know, is there anybody that's on this line that has heard of our book?
No, huh?
No. I mean, that sort of proves my point, okay? They don't want you to know about this book.
Right, right.
And if anyone should know about this book, it's WILF members. Okay, so check it out on Amazon.com. Thy will be done. The Conquest of the Amazon. What?
You could put it on the text pad, too, so that people on this call could look it up.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to do that. I'm not sure. But, you know, and of course it's all about oil. It's all about other things, but above all, it's all about oil, whether it's in the Middle East or in the Latin America, and the primo, the tutti primo copy in this whole thing is Rockefeller. That's my comment.
Okay, thank you. We have a question from Linda Conte from New York. Linda? Linda there?
Yes.
Linda?
Thank you.
Oh, there you are.
She just answered the question by repeating the title of the book. I'm looking forward to reading it. Thank you.
Great. Okay. So we have another question, I guess, from Judy Adams in Menlo Park. Is that right, Judy?
I just added the link just below someone who wrote in, here's the book by Charlotte Dennett. I put the Amazon.com link. It's a Kindle edition.
Okay, great. Thank you. Diane Blaze.
Yes. I was just going to say I wanted the name. I had heard of it on the disarm call that we had last Sunday, I guess. She had been speaking about it. So that's the only time I heard of it. And then I couldn't find it, but now I have it. So thank you.
Great. Thank you. Okay, and we have one last question, I think, from Connie Gates from North Carolina. Connie? Connie, are you have your mute set, maybe? Can you check? We can't hear you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You know, I was just going to say, I heard about that book years ago. I never read it, but I knew about it. But I thought it was some year, you know, quite a few years ago. And so thank you for writing it. I'm glad to know the author.
Great.
That's all.
Okay, thank you.